Gentlemen, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Concert Experience here on AfterBuzz TV. Today we have singer, songwriter, and all-around lovely lady, Megan Davies, here in studio. So don't move a muscle.
You're tuning into the destination for TV superfan discussion, AfterBuzz TV. And now, let the buzz begin.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to AfterBuzz TV's The Concert Experience. As I mentioned at the top, we have Megan Davies here in studio. And let's take 30 seconds just to listen. That voice is so lovely, Megan. Thank you for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely.
Awesome.
If you guys don't know, my name is Jeff Graham. If you guys want to find me online, you can do so at Jeffrey C. Graham. Megan, where can the people find you if they want to connect with you on social media?
So I'm on YouTube at MeganDavies711, or just at Megan Davies now, I think. And on Twitter and Instagram at Megan A. Davies.
Wonderful. The thing I love about this song in particular is it starts with a beautiful lick, which proves that you're not only a vocalist, but a great guitarist. And for those listening, we're lucky enough that Megan will be performing at the end of our interview, which is going to be awesome. But before we talk about your musical genius and your musical prowess and your new EP coming out, which is called Bad Poetry, which we definitely will be talking about, I want to talk about your early life. So where are you from? Where'd you get started? And we mentioned before we went on air, you didn't necessarily come from a super musically inclined family. So talk about it.
No, my parents are not musicians, but they like music for sure. And they're fans of music, but they are not musicians. I grew up and born and raised in Pennsylvania, Harrisburg.
Yeah, I know Harrisburg.
And central state. And I pretty much, you know, I loved music. I listened to a ton of music. Didn't really know anything about it, how it was made. And then found a guitar when I was like 12 in my grandparents' basement. I think it was something my mom tried when she was younger and gave up really quickly and asked them if I could have it, and they let me have it. And I just started taking lessons, and I mean, just loved it so much. Just couldn't stop playing it.
So were your grandparents musicians?
My grandpa played piano by ear. He was actually really good in his day, I'm told. He stopped playing a bit when he was older. He got arthritis, but everyone in the family says I got it from him.
Okay.
So I don't know how that works, but
it sometimes skips a generation.
That's what my parents will say for sure.
Nice. So guitar was kind of your entree into music in general. Does that sound right?
Yeah, that was it. I mean, I think I might have taken a few piano lessons when I was younger, and I was really bad. Like I never practiced. And I was just god awful, and I think I may have played violin for like a year, and also really really bad. So I'm surprised my parents let me tackle it. But I think I loved it, and I think that's like the key to learning anything. It's just like loving it a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you know you were a vocalist as well, or did you kind of discover that?
No, I was really shy as a kid. I had a lot of social anxiety, I think, and I would book shows at coffee shops and be like, oh yeah, I'm gonna sing, and then not sing and bring my sister and make her sing everything.
Nice.
And that's how she got into singing.
Cool.
Because I would get really scared and not sing. But you know, I think the longer you play guitar, the more you're just kind of forced to sing with it.
Yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, a thing to do when you play guitar. So
yeah, it does kind of feel like guitar on its own is like peanut butter, and then when you add a vocalist, it's like peanut butter and jelly. Like they just need to go together.
Yeah, and I mean, even guitar players who are like, I don't sing, they definitely have to sing. I mean, it's hard not to sing along with a guitar.
Definitely.
You know?
Yeah, you'll hear like amazing guitarists just noodle along vocally with their licks.
Yeah,
and
you just play chords. It's like very campfire-esque.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah. Very cool. So that's so neat that you and your sister kind of discovered you both liked music through your discovery of guitar. That's so neat. Okay, cool. So you must have learned that you liked music before you went to college, because you went to Belmont.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When I got that guitar, I mean, it's funny. I didn't have much musical training before that, but I really jumped into it. I mean, when there was a snow day, I would be inside and playing guitar all day. It was my like video game, I guess.
And, yeah.
I would, especially once I discovered YouTube, I was watching tutorials and watching just finding videos of my favorite players and just like trying to do what they would do. And it was a great way to learn, and took lessons and started going to a performing arts school my junior year of high school.
Cool.
I got really serious about classical guitar. And did that, and then eventually went to Belmont University for guitar. That's what I started out as, a guitar major.
Great, so you were just a guitar major before. Okay, so when did you decide to incorporate vocals into your kind of oeuvre.
Right, yeah. So I was always kind of singing a little bit, but I would never, like, admit to it. Like, if people asked me, are you a singer or a guitar player, I'd always say guitar player. Mm-hmm. Who sings on the side, maybe. Like, I would never sing without a guitar, basically. And basically, junior year, I injured my elbow. I had surgery, and I couldn't play for, I think, like, 7 or 8 months. Wow. And I started getting more into songwriting because I just was, like, looking for any outlet to grab mm-hmm. onto. And I eventually had to switch my major because I couldn't play for so long. And I switched it to songwriting, and that's when I really started singing a lot more. And then, of course, after college, when I started my channel, it gave me, like, singing on my channel gave me a ton of confidence. You know, the support Jacqueline, my sister, and I received was great. And I just started singing a lot more, and now I feel like I sing just as much as I play guitar.
Well, so. Here's what I'll say. This is specific, but mm-hmm. my favorite vocalists are the ones who discovered their vocalists after they learned they were instrumentalists, yeah. because a very specific compliment I'll give you is that you sing very in tune.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, and I grew up, like, playing French horn, so, okay. I am really critical, not critical, but just perceptive about singers being in tune.
Thank you.
And it's so refreshing to me when a pop singer just really locks into the key. So that's a very kind of weird, pointed, specific yeah. praise for you, but appreciated as a listener how in tune you sing.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. It's also great because I think you exude such a naturalistic vocal style. Mm-hmm. It's so unaffected and honest, which I think probably comes from the fact that you discovered you were a vocalist after you learned that you were a performer.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've tried really hard not to sound like anyone, and I think it's also in part because I don't have, like, a very big voice, like American Idol, like, huge belty mm-hmm. type voice, and I knew that pretty early on, so I try to make it just, like, true to myself, yeah. and I'm definitely influenced by a lot of vocalists, but I stopped trying to, like, sound like them, mm-hmm. I guess.
Yeah. When I heard you, the first thing I kind of thought was Joni Mitchell. Is she an influence
nice.
For you at all?
Yeah, I mean, my mom definitely played a lot of that
nice.
Growing up, and honestly, a lot of other, like, female singer-songwriters, like Sheryl Crow and mm-hmm. Sarah McLachlan was on yeah. a lot, and, you know, so I don't think I try to sound like them necessarily, but I'm sure, like, subconsciously, it's all in there. You know?
Well, I think what you share with a lot of the great kind of classic female singer-songwriters, even of the 90s that you're sort of mentioning, was just yeah, like a commitment to authentic and true vocalization. And just, yeah. I think, a focus on telling a story and allowing lyrics to exist along with the music rather than pushing. I think you know what I'm saying.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of it is just I'm kind of forced to do that because I don't have a huge, like, belty yeah. voice, so I just kind of do what I can. But it is sort of an honest style, and I think, especially in the past few years, I've started touring a lot more, doing, like, a lot of DIY, sleeping on couches, playing every type of venue tours, and you know, when you're on stage, you just got to be true to yourself. You really can't, you know, pretend to be someone else, especially when you're playing in front of different audiences who may or may not be listening to you entirely.
Right.
Like, especially, like, early on when you're playing bars and mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like, I mean, if you're not playing something that's and sounding true to yourself, it's like, what are you even doing?
Absolutely.
You know?
But unfortunately, so many musicians do that, so it is greatly yeah. appreciated from your fans.
You.
I want to hear about the experience of going to a musical college. What was that mm-hmm. like? Just kind of the day-to-day.
I mean, Belmont's definitely a big music school, and even people who aren't studying music are typically musicians because it's right in the center of Nashville. It's right on the row. There's lots of, like, record labels around, so I think mm-hmm. a lot of people go there, like, hoping to get a record deal and things like that. So it's good. It's another probably big reason on why you're kind of forced to find your own voice, because when you move to Nashville, there's people who are better than you in every form. You know, like, you're gonna find better singers, better guitar players, better people who are really good, who are, like, the best of where they came from. And at a certain point, you can't really just strive to be technically the best. You have to, like, you know, just find your own, like, thing, like mm-hmm. find your own thing that's unique to you and that feels right to you, as opposed to just, like, who can sing the highest note or things like that.
Yeah, that's such a great observation for mm-hmm. our listeners, because it is true, if you want to exist as an artist, whether you're an actor or a writer or a musician, if you focus on speaking what is true to you mm-hmm. and, like, what really makes yourself a true artist, people will flock to you, you know?
Yeah, and I think some, like, when, I mean, I used to do that. I used to, like, especially when I was in high school, I wanted to be like the best guitar player in the room. And I think guitar playing in general can be very competitive. Mm-hmm. And I think moving to Nashville and then having, you know, the thing where, you know, I couldn't play for a while. And I almost, you know, I had surgery and there was like a risk when I did the surgery that I wouldn't be able to play in the future. There was like a 10% chance that like I wouldn't regain some of like the nerve function in my hand. So I immediately, it just became like, oh, why am I trying to be the best person in the room? Like I want to, you know, it's music isn't about that. And that's not why I love playing. I love playing because I like connecting with people. And I love, you know, just being in a room with people and you know, just having that emotional sort of connection. And but yeah, I think that's, you know, a huge part of why I you know, turned out this way.
yeah absolutely. Yeah. Speaking of, you kind of started to accrue your tribe through YouTube, is that right? That's kind of how you first started to amass a following outside 100%. Of your immediate circle.
Yeah, 100%. YouTube was just sort of an unexpected thing. I graduated college having no idea what I wanted to do. I knew I loved creating things. I loved, you know, making music, recording. I loved video even. Mm-hmm. And I was just kind of on a whim. I started the YouTube channel with my sister. We did a mashup cover together and it got like 5,000 views. And then we were like, well, let's do another one. And I think the next one got like 10,000 views. So I just, you know, kept cranking away. And my sister didn't live in Nashville at the time. She would just visit occasionally. So I would just recruit friends of mine in Nashville to do things with. And it was a pleasant surprise that people, you know, tuned in and liked what we were doing.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned like the video component and the mm-hmm. mashup component, because I think part of the reason your early following found you was mm-hmm. really the intelligence with which you approached, because there's so many cover singers on YouTube mm-hmm. and you have these brilliant genius mashups of songs. Do you just hear that? How do you produce those?
The first one just started out like my sister and I, we were just hanging out. I think she was visiting for her birthday, and what she wanted to do was just record something with me. And I was like a broke, like, you know, post college grad. I was like, had no money for a gift or anything. So I was just like, that sounds amazing. I can totally record something with you for your birthday. And we were kind of trying to come up with a cover, and the songs we were doing Radioactive by Imagine Dragons. Nice. And Pumped Up Kicks by Foster the People.
I was like, yeah, trying to remember too.
Yeah, and they had similar chord progressions. And I was like, what if we just sang it? Like, as a joke, I was like, what if we just like sang them on top of each other? Uh-huh. And so we just tried it. And I think we recorded it like first on our phone, just like a little quick video. And I was like, wow, that actually sounded really cool. It had like this counterpoint type effect where mm-hmm. like at moments we were kind of harmonizing and then we were branching off. And it's kind of like a brain twisting exercise too, because you can't listen to what the other person's doing, right. You know? But yeah, it was just a total like, oh, this would be cool. And then we just kind of fleshed it out more, you know, and then a lot of the times another component of our mashups is just, you know, coming up with a cool, guitar sort of part that's, you know, a little different and, you know, that kind of matches both songs. I think we did another mashup that was, I See Fire by Ed Sheeran and Burn by Ellie Goulding. And I played the I See Fire guitar part under Burn, and then the Burn like synth line on the guitar under I See Fire. So I try to like challenge myself a bit on the guitar as well with those. But
I love that too, because you're gonna kind of placate to your not as musically inclined fans who just mm-hmm. love those songs, but then your like music nerds who love that stuff will notice that as well.
I am a music nerd, yeah. So I can't help but put a lot of that stuff in.
I'm sure. Well, and you studied songwriting, so I'm sure you'd feel like you were disservicing your major if you didn't
totally,
get some of those
technicalities. Yeah, I try to put some stuff here and there, and other times I'm just really jamming, just like having a good time. But
cool. Yeah. So during all this time, you were working kind of an administrative role in music publishing. So I want to hear kind of exactly what you were doing and sort of what that was like to be just like ruthlessly pursuing your art while also mm-hmm. having a 9-to-5.
Yeah, I graduated and I started working like a $9 an hour sort of like entry level position in the music business. I was number crunching in Excel, listening to podcasts all day.
Nice.
Like, but not what I wanted to do any shape or form. And I would come home and just have so much energy to just like, because I didn't want to be doing what I was doing, so I would work on videos at night, you know. And I had like at the time I look back and I'm just like, man, I was working so many hours a week, but I think because I was just so driven to get out of that job and just create something else for myself. I did it for a while, probably like a year and a half, where I was just working nights and weekends and just cranking out as much video content as I could.
Nice. So how did you finally make the decision to, like, when did you know that you were able to kind of make that leap into full-time music?
So I'm very, like, fiscally conservative. I've had friends who've made the leap into music a lot sooner. I waited a year and a half, really, until I was making almost as much as I was. I mean, I wasn't getting paid a ton of my job, but, like, I could make enough week to week to, like, pay my rent and, like, and that stuff. So I waited probably a little bit longer, but it was terrifying regardless. Yeah. Like, I still remember the first week that I didn't have, like, a job, quote-unquote, to go to, and I was like, oh, my gosh.
I'm sure, like, you're the kind of person who, like, could sleep in, but you're still getting up at 8 a.m. and practicing right away.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm up early, and, I mean, it's also because I love what I do.
Right.
There's a small part of me that was like, oh my gosh, if I don't have like a job or school to go to, like, am I just gonna like sleep all day and like watch Netflix? And I surprised myself. I mean there's definitely weekends where I'm totally Netflixing out, but for the most part I stay pretty strong to, like, you know, working all day and, you know, putting stuff out. So
we were talking about this a bit, but we're a TV network. We also do interviews, of course. Right. What are some of your shows right now that you're watching, that you're Netflixing?
I mean, I watch a lot of shows. I just finished up Orange is the New Black.
Nice.
And
I haven't finished that season yet, but Jenji Kohan, who executive produces that show, did Glow. I don't know if you got a chance to check that out.
No, I have it downloaded on like my Netflix. I'm going to watch it probably on my plane ride.
Yes, you will love it.
LA.
Especially if you like Orange, you'll like that show.
I love, my favorite thing about Orange is like the dialogue and oh my gosh, I love how she writes.
Yeah.
And so I just finished that, and I mean, I'm a sucker for a lot of CW shows, like The 100 and Vampire Diaries.
Nice. A lot of our fans love the CW, so you're winning points with our
listeners. Great.
do you feel like, so this is an interesting thing I like to ask artists, because a lot of actors or singers will say they need to like refill their well, like, because when you're performing, you're kind of letting it go. Do you feel like TV sort of lets you recharge? Like, what are some of the recharging things that you do to really prepare yourself?
TV 100%, because I know like my mom's a huge fan of the show Nashville, and I like can't watch that show because it's like, I feel like I live in Nashville and I'm listening to people talk music industry things all the time.
Right.
And like when I sit down to TV, like I want to watch like vampires or like zombies or something.
Absolutely.
I don't want to watch any like music business talk at all.
For sure.
But yeah, so it's definitely an escape thing for me.
Cool.
And like downtime thing for me.
I love it.
Yeah.
So what was your first, talking about YouTube, talking about slowly making your way, did you have like the this video went viral moment, or was it more like a slow snowball of?
I didn't on YouTube. On Spotify I did a bit, but YouTube was such a slow girl. I definitely have a video now that's probably my most watched video. It's definitely my most watched video, my See You Again mashup. But that kind of,
it's awesome. There's a reason.
Oh,
it's
thank
great.
You
yeah,
very much. But that actually happened after I quit my job, and I already, you know, was building, you know, I already was had like a million views on some videos.
Yeah.
And but there wasn't like, oh, I got a million views on a video and then all of a sudden I was, you know, my channel was jump started. It was such a slow grow from the beginning, and I think that's good to know too, because, you know, people who are just starting out channels and stuff, I think there's this idea that you just get a viral video and boom, that's it. And for me, it was just a slow grow.
Great. So. Well, our boss, our executive producer, says that as an artist, your goal is to be like a good stock that just slowly rises.
Yeah.
And they say if you have a peak that happens too fast, it can really affect your stock. So it sounds like you did it the right way.
Totally. And I always think too, like, you know, as the channel, as I was putting more stuff out and doing that, the whole slow growth thing, I think it was slowly getting better as well, and I was always like striving to figure out how to make it sound better, how to make it look better.
That's what's so fun about YouTube, is you can actually physically watch an artist grow.
Yeah.
YouTube in general is such a cool platform, because we were talking about this a bit before we went on air, but it's like so democratic, because it's like artists and fans with nothing in between.
Yeah.
What does that mean to you as a performer?
It's pretty amazing to have like the audience right there. I mean, I make something and I edit it on my computer and then I literally press upload and then boom, people can see it. And that's pretty powerful, especially working in Nashville, which is kind of an old school music industry town. And there's like a way of doing things and there's gatekeepers, and it can feel at times like there's a brick wall between you, what you want to do and where you want to be. And I think the internet has kind of provided this like back door and, and websites like YouTube where, well, I don't really care. I'm just going to put this up anyhow. So to me, it's like been everything. I mean, obviously, YouTube's been my main platform. So it's pretty powerful.
So as someone who was working in Nashville kind of during the YouTube revolution, could you feel it? Could you sort of feel the foundations of the city shaking a little bit?
It's still shaking. It's kind of, I think, one of the last cities to sort of catch on to it. This LA is a big YouTuber town, and it's always funny to me when I come out here because I meet a lot of people who do YouTube, which is really cool. I'm always asking them questions because I don't know too many people in Nashville who do YouTube. But yeah, I think people are curious about it. People in the industry, and I get a lot of questions about how it works and how I've done it, and it's always very simple answers because it's really just been me.
Right.
So yeah.
Yeah, I told my truth. So I'm so excited about Bad Poetry. I can't wait. When does it officially drop? Let's just talk about that now.
So I've actually been dropping the acoustic versions of all the songs in June, every Friday in June. And I put them on Spotify, and then I released acoustic videos for every song as well. And but the full production EP comes out July 28th.
Amazing. And so soon. Yeah. Very exciting.
Yeah, very soon.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but this is, you've done original music, obviously. Yeah. You were a songwriting major, but this is sort of your first public release of produced.
Oh, yeah.
So talk about, I want to hear all about, because I'm sure you've written a million songs, right?
Yeah, I've written a lot, and I was very nervous, I think, over because it was 4 years ago I started my channel, and I was definitely writing in between it. And as the audience was growing and people loved the covers, loved the mashups, it progressively got scarier to release originals, I think, because I was like, oh my god, they love the covers so much. What if I put originals out and they don't like them? Or, you know, I was really nervous about that, especially because, you know, originals are so personal. And covers, you know, if someone's like, I don't like your cover, I'm like, well,
that's just not like the words.
That's okay. Yeah, they don't like the song or something. No, but there's something like very personal when someone critiques like your song, and it's not so much about one critique, but I was like, what if I release it and just no one gets it? Like, and so that was like a huge hurdle for me. And when I quit my job, I guess it was like 2.5 years ago, the first thing I did was start touring, and I just, you know, I like email coffee shops and bars and like areas I'd never been to and be like, I have this many subscribers on YouTube, please book me a show. And I did tours like that for a while just with friends, and just got comfortable on the stage and would play these originals live for, you know, however many people were there. And it was then that I realized, okay, I think I can do it, because, you know, just playing them live and being able to get feedback from a live audience and talk to people after the show, you know, it gave me confidence to eventually put it on YouTube.
Cool. I love it.
Yeah.
So talk about the album.
Yeah. The album Bad Poetry EP is, it's five songs. So, and it's the first five songs I've ever had like full production on. I mean, everything I've released so far has been acoustic vocal.
Right.
And, that's how I perform live. I'm like most comfortable with just me and my acoustic guitar, but I really wanted to bring some other instruments in, and, you know, we have drums, we have violins, we have electric guitars, which were really fun to play around with, and bass, and, you know, so it's definitely sort of an evolution of the sound I've sort of been cultivating on YouTube for a while.
Great. So, yeah. And kind of without going too much into detail, or however much you want, what are you dealing with lyrically on this album?
A lot of it, I mean, I just turned 27 last week.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Still very young.
Yeah. And I started these songs, I guess, when I was 25 and into like my 26th year. And it's, you know, your mid-20s, you're an adult technically, but you like don't feel like an adult, at least not like what you thought feeling like an adult would feel like.
Right.
And it's a lot of that. It's a lot of just trying to figure out, figure out your life and what directions you want to go into, and then also just becoming more confident in yourself as a person. Mm-hmm. So I think it's a lot of existentialism thoughts like that, but it's a lot about where I was at the time and where I'm still at, honestly.
Cool. So. Well, that's July 28th.
July 28th.
Yeah. Awesome. And they can be found, I'm sure, all digital platforms.
Yes. iTunes, amazing. Spotify, Google, Amazon, all those good ones.
And I'm hoping you'll be touring to promote the album. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah. There's some things in the works right now for the fall that I can't say anything about, but it'll be definitely the biggest thing I've ever done. And I'm really, really excited. So.
Good. And if people want to learn more, I'm sure they should just follow you, right?
Yeah. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. And yeah, you'll get the announcements first for sure.
Wonderful. Well, if you guys want a preview of the new EP, you can find it on your website because there are acoustic versions. But the real appeal of the EP is this is kind of the first time we're hearing Megan Davies produced. And I mean that in the best way. I know.
Oh, yeah.
So we're so excited for July 28th. That's Bad Poetry EP. Check it out and stay tuned for some tour dates. The best part about the interview is about to come because we get to hear you perform.
Yay.
For those listening, I'm going... Ooh, listen to that. We have an awesome producer in the booth. I'm going to go ahead and grab Megan's guitar. You can sit right there.
Okay, cool.
For those listening, it'll be just 1 minute while we get prepped. Stay tuned.
Wonderful.
I could do a little talking in the meantime from the back booth.
From the booth.
Just because I'm really excited about Megan performing here. We heard her in soundcheck. And definitely a lovely individual. So
this is your camera.
Megan, what song are you going
to
sing?
But you don't need to sing to it.
Okay,
just
cool.
Perform.
I'm going to be singing a song on the EP called Black and White. Let's make sure. Making sure it's in tune.
It's always good.
This guitar is still
It's the worst thing to start a performance and be like, oh, the E string's out of tune.
I've done it so much, too. Plus, like, this guitar is still getting used to the California weather.
Nice.
So, all right, let's see here.
You guys are getting the full artist experience.
I know. This is what happens in a musician's life. It's a lot of tuning.
If we were to total the number of hours you've tuned,
God. At least a day. At least 24 hours.
Nice.
All right, here we go. Years and I still don't know myself. Yeah, I wanna find love, but I don't wanna be tied down. And I wanna get rich, but I don't wanna be sold out. And I wanna grow old, but I'm cool with being young for now. All my life I'm pushing, pulling every direction. I fall then rise, but I'm moving, I'm moving. I'm never gonna be one thing, and I'm not making no apologies. Yeah, I'll keep painting outside those lines. Doesn't have to be black and white. And I don't know where my heart is, or if it's ever gonna hit that target. Whatever life I live is mine. Doesn't have to be black, have to be black and white. Don't have to be black and white. Travel this world, but today I'm gonna stay inside. Keep praying for change, then turn around and close my blinds. If I give what I got, can I still try to keep what's mine? Yeah, and I wanna speak truth, but it's easier to lie sometimes. All my life I'm pushing, pulling every direction. I fall then rise, but I'm moving, I'm moving. I'm never gonna be one thing, and I'm not making no apologies. Yeah, I'll keep painting outside those lines. Doesn't have to be black and white. And I don't know where my heart is, or if it's ever gonna hit that target. Whatever life I live is mine. Doesn't have to be black, have to be black and white. Don't have to be black and white. So I stand up, make my peace with the choices at my feet. It's the drama, the chaos, the unknown.
that sets me free. Free, yeah. I'm never gonna be one thing, and I'm not making no apologies. Yeah, I'll keep painting outside those lines. Doesn't have to be black and white. And I don't know where my heart is, or if it's ever gonna hit that target. Whatever life I live is mine. Doesn't have to be black, have to be black and white. Back in my heat, don't have to be back in. I got 25 years and I still don't know myself. Don't have to be black in white.
Wow!
Thank you.
Man, for those listening, you just heard a wonderful performance from Megan Davies. Well, that just sold me. I'm definitely getting the album. I can't wait. Hey, July 28th, hey, guys. You got to get it. That's on the album, right?
That is on the album, okay. Yes.
Wow, what a such a beautiful intersection of truth. And I love lyrically deep songs that still have a nice groove. It's
yeah.
got a pleasant pops. It's just really beautiful stuff.
This was one I really wanted to put drums to.
Like, yeah.
I was so excited when we got a drummer in the room and was like, yes, just groove.
Yeah, it's like totally a contemporary song, but has a bit of like that 90s folk rock feel, which I love so much. So. Yeah. Guys, that's Black and White
Black
by Megan
White.
Davies on Bad Poetry, which drops July 28th. Megan, this has been so much fun.
Yeah, oh my gosh, I love being here. I've listened to your guys' podcasts and stuff.
I didn't tell her to say that.
Yeah,
you But
didn't.
She just did. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. For those tuning in for the first time, those who might know Megan but not know AfterBuzz, we do produce other podcasts, so we're primarily a TV network, but we do a lot of reviews and interviews, and just check us out. If you're on YouTube now, we've got pretty much everything. We're covering everything you want. We also have podcasts, as Megan mentioned. Thanks so much. And we have other networks, too, so but we're here for you, Megan. So.
The crowd's going wild.
Listen to that. But I can't thank you enough. This was really, really fun.
Thank you for letting me be here.
You got it. I guess that's the end of our interview, guys. But keep staying tuned. You can find us on AfterBuzz TV. If you guys want to find me online, you can do so at Jeffrey C. Graham. I'm currently hosting the Claws After Show, which airs on TNT. And I also host and produce a show on Fridays on our sister network, Popcorn Talk, where we table read unproduced pilot and feature scripts. So tune in there. Megan, where can they find you online?
I am on YouTube at MeganDavies711 and Instagram and Twitter at Megan A. Davies. So.
The nice thing is, you're at the point now where if Megan Davies is searched, you will definitely be found. So.
Yes, there was a while if you searched my name, you'd find like a doctor.
Nice. Well, I think I'm still at the point where you find a very, very large athletic African-American football player, so
yeah.
Not quite me.
Google's starting to catch on. I'm still, if you Google my name, it says I'm 73 years old, so that's actually true.
Nice. It's the age of your soul, right?
Slowly they're getting it right, nice. You know.
Awesome. Well, this has been a blast. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
And guys, again, this has been The Concert Experience here with Megan Davies. One last plug. You can catch her new EP, Bad Poetry, dropping July 28th. Okay. I'll definitely be getting it. In the meantime, guys, we'll see you next time. Thanks so much.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.